Welcome, Discovery Rangers. Today we will be exploring Earth's magnetic shield versus tougher tech, the Smile Space Mission.
Imagine, for just a second, that you are walking around inside this colossal invisible bubble.
Like a massive silent force field.
Yeah, exactly. A force field that completely surrounds the Earth and it, you know, stretches out thousands of miles into the vacuum of space.
And it is a very, very good thing that bubble is there.
Oh, totally. Because outside of it, there's this continuous high-speed storm of radioactive particles. Well, they're trying to blast our planet every single second of the day.
It really changes how you look at the sky, you know, when you realize there's this epic physical battle happening right over our heads.
Right.
We just go about our daily lives completely shielded from some of the most violent physics in the solar system.
It's wild. So today we are taking a deep dive to figure out how that invisible shield actually works.
And we have some really exciting news on that front.
We do. We are tracking a brand new space weather detective. It's called the Smile spacecraft. And it officially launched today, May 19th, 2026.
Which is a huge milestone.
It really is. So we're going to look at that and also the incredible and honestly, sometimes backward-sounding engineering tricks we use to build armor for our gadgets.
Because that's the real issue here.
Right. Our mission today is to discover exactly how we defend our technology, our satellites, and just everyday electronics from wild space weather.
Which is a vulnerability that just, you know, grows every time a new satellite goes up.
Yeah.
I mean, our daily routines, global comms, power grids, they're all dependent on hardware floating in a really hostile environment.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have this giant magnetic bubble. The scientific word for it, our hard word for the day, is the magnetosphere.
Right, the magnetosphere.
And we always hear the term solar wind thrown around.
Yeah.
But we aren't talking about a breezy day at the park here. What is actually hitting us?
So the solar wind is a continuous flow of really fast, tiny particles.
Like how tiny?
Subatomic. You're dealing mostly with protons, electrons, and helium nuclei. And the sun is just constantly boiling them off into space at roughly 1,000,000 miles an hour.
1,000,000 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I like to think of our magnetosphere as this invisible umbrella.
Right, it's a good way to picture it.
Just keeping us dry in this wild rainstorm of space particles. But I have to push back a little. If the umbrella is so big and powerful, how do the space particles actually sneak in and mess with our satellites and power grids?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to remember the magnetosphere is highly flexible.
Oh, okay.
It's an energy field, right? Not a solid wall. So when the massive pressure of a sudden solar storm hits like a giant burst of these particles, the day side of our magnetic shield gets crushed inward toward the Earth.
Like the umbrella bending in the wind.
Exactly. Yeah. And the night side, the back of it, gets stretched out into this massive long tail.
So it actually deforms under the pressure.
Severely. And when those magnetic lines are stretched too far, they undergo this violent process called magnetic reconnection.
Magnetic reconnection.
Yeah, basically the stretched lines pinch together, snap, and instantly reconnect into a new, shorter shape.
Wait, like a rubber band being pulled until it just snaps back?
Very similar, yeah. And just like a snapping rubber band, it releases a tremendous amount of stored energy.
Ouch.
Right. It acts like a giant slingshot, firing all those trapped, charged particles straight down the magnetic field lines and into Earth's upper atmosphere.
Oh, wow. So during a big storm, our own shield temporarily turns into a particle accelerator.
Essentially, yes. It blasts our upper atmosphere, and that's when our radio signals get scrambled and electrical grids on the ground take massive spikes in current.
That is terrifying.
It is, which is why scientists realize, you know, to stop these sneaky particles, we first need to be able to actually see what our invisible umbrella is doing during a storm.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Enter the Smile spacecraft.
Yes, the ultimate space weather detective.
Right. Smile stands for Solar Wind Magnetosphere Ionosphere Link Explorer. It's this joint mission built by the European Space Agency and the Chinese Academy of Sciences.
And as you mentioned, it just launched today on a Vega C rocket from Kourou.
It's a big deal. We're talking about a 2,250-kilogram machine up there.
Running on about 850 watts of power for its three-year mission, yeah.
And it has four instruments, but the coolest one has to be the soft X-ray imager because it uses this thing called a lobster eye telescope.
It's a brilliant piece of engineering.
I just love the sound of it. It sounds like superhero X-ray vision. But why lobsters? What do they have to do with seeing X-rays in space?
Well, building a telescope for X-rays is notoriously hard.
Why is that?
Because X-ray photons have so much energy, if you point a normal glass mirror at them, the X-rays just pass straight through the mirror.
They don't bounce at all?
Nope. They just blast right through or get absorbed. Unless, and this is the trick, they hit a surface at an extremely shallow grazing angle.
Oh, like skipping a stone across a pond?
Exactly like that. If you throw the stone straight down, it sinks. Throw it low and fast across the water, and it skips.
So how does the lobster fit in?
A lobster's eye works the exact same way to gather light in the dark ocean. It's not a curved lens like ours. It's made of thousands of tiny square tubes.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, light enters the tubes and skips along the inside walls, funneling down to a single point. So the SMILE telescope is built the exact same way to capture X-rays.
That is super cool. So when the solar wind slams into the outer edge of our magnetic shield, our other hard word, the magnetopause, it creates X-rays.
Yes, a faint glow of X-rays right at that boundary, and this skipping stone telescope can capture them.
Meaning we can actually take a picture of an invisible force field.
We are quite literally taking a photograph of the boundary where the solar storm meets Earth's magnetic field.
That is amazing. And SMILE isn't just doing X-rays. It has an ultraviolet imager to watch the northern lights, plus instruments to feel the solar wind's speed and density.
The LIA and the MAG, yes.
But okay, I have to challenge this for a second.
Go for it.
We already have supercomputers.
Yeah.
We have ground stations, and we have older weather satellites up there like GOES and Cluster. Why do we need to send a brand new 2,250-kilogram detective up there just to take a picture?
What's fascinating here is that before SMILE, we were honestly just guessing at the big picture.
Really?
Just guessing.
Mostly, yeah. We had a satellite taking a measurement in one spot and another taking a reading somewhere else. You're trying to figure out what the entire global shield is doing based on a few scattered data points.
Oh, like trying to guess what a whole painting looks like by only looking through a tiny straw.
Exactly. SMILE changes all of that because of its orbit. It flies in a highly elliptical orbit.
Meaning it swings way out there.
Yeah, out to about 121,000 kilometers away from Earth. That's nearly a third of the way to the moon.
Wait, why go so far out into deep space if the goal is to look back at Earth?
Because of how orbits work. A satellite moves much slower when it's at the furthest, highest point of its orbit.
Oh, so it just kind of hangs out up there. Right. By swinging out that far, SMILE basically parks itself high above the Earth, moving slow enough to stare at the entire magnetosphere for up to 40 hours at a time.
That's a huge window.
It gives us the very first global view of the magnetopause boundary shifting, while also watching the auroras react at the exact same time. It's the ultimate space weather forecaster.
Okay, so it gives us the warning.
Mm-hmm.
But even with a perfect weather app warning you about a storm, you still need a tough raincoat if you step outside.
You definitely do.
When the space weather forecast says a massive wave of radiation is coming, how do we stop our technology from just getting completely fried?
That comes down to radiation hardening. Or, you know, rad-hard engineering.
Rad-hard. Sounds tough.
It has to be. The main goal of radiation hardening is to prevent something called a single event upset, or an SEU.
Our third hard word. Single event upset.
Oh.
What is physically happening inside a computer chip when that happens?
Well, a computer processor relies on millions of tiny transistors holding specific electrical charges to store data.
Right, the ones and zeros.
Exactly. When a high-energy space particle, like a super-fast proton, hits the silicon of a computer chip, it acts like a microscopic wrecking ball.
Just smashing through.
Smashing right through the silicon lattice, knocking electrons loose from their atoms all along its path.
So it leaves a trail of loose electrons inside the chip. That sounds bad.
It is, because those loose electrons create an artificial electrical charge. The transistor gets confused, thinks that Sutter pool of charge is a real command, and it flips a single bit of memory.
A one becomes a zero.
Exactly. And if that one flipped bit was, say, part of a command sequence for a satellite's navigation,
the whole satellite could just spin out of control.
Entire missions can be lost in a fraction of a second, all because one proton went through the wrong transistor.
That is wild, which is why engineers have come up with three ways to build gadget armor. Let's start with the first one, process hardening.
Right. This is about the physical materials the chip is built on.
Normal chips are built on bulk silicon, right?
Yeah. And if radiation hits a normal chip, that stray electrical charge can travel through the material and pool under a transistor. So process hardening uses things like silicon on insulator wafers.
Meaning they add a layer of insulating glass?
Exactly. A microscopic layer of glass just below the transistors. It acts like a physical firewall. When a particle hits, the charge gets trapped and can't travel through the chip to cause a fake signal.
That is so smart.
Yeah.
Okay, then there's method two, design hardening.
Mm.
And this is my absolute favorite trick. It's called triple modular redundancy.
It's an incredibly clever architectural solution.
I love explaining this one. It's basically like having three friends do the exact same math problem.
That's a great analogy.
You build three completely separate copies of the circuit on the processor. They all do the math at the same time, and then they vote on the answer.
Right. So if a space particle hits one circuit and causes a single event upset, giving it a silly wrong answer, the other two circuits will instantly outvote it.
The error gets ignored and the satellite just keeps working. It's brilliant.
It is. And that's what makes the system redundant, meaning it has built-in backups. Though the trade-off is you're using three times the physical space on your microchip.
True. Which brings us to the third method, shielding. Just wrapping the parts in armor to block the radiation. But honestly, couldn't we just wrap all our satellites in thick metal armor and be done with it?
It seems like the obvious answer, right? Just bolt everything inside a thick box of tungsten or lead. But heavy metals cause two massive problems in space.
Let me guess. The first one is weight.
Absolutely. Every extra kilogram of shielding costs thousands of dollars to launch. But the second problem is a physics phenomenon called Bremsstrahlung radiation.
Oh boy. Bremsstrahlung.
Yeah. It means breaking radiation. When a super-fast particle hits a dense, heavy metal, it slows down incredibly fast.
It slams on the brakes.
Right. And that sudden braking makes the particle shed its energy by shooting out a shower of secondary X-rays.
Wait, so the armor actually turns the space particle into radioactive shrapnel?
Exactly. And those secondary X-rays can be way more damaging to the electronics inside than the original particle would have been.
That is totally counterintuitive.
So instead of heavy lead, engineers use graded shielding. Layers of lighter materials like aluminum or special ceramics to slow the particles down gently.
Without triggering that massive shower of shrapnel.
Precisely.
Wow.
Mm.
And doing all of this, the special glass, the voting circuits, the ceramic layers, it's a huge business.
Well, absolutely massive.
The global market for radiation-hardened electronics was worth almost $2 billion in 2025. And it's projected to boom to $3.4 billion by 2035.
Because we keep launching more stuff.
Exactly. But these solutions are definitely not cheap, which brings top scientists to a really tricky decision, the great space debate.
Right. It's a continuous argument over resource allocation, watch versus armor.
So what does this all mean? Let's break down the costs. An amazing observation mission like SMILE costs about $150 million.
Right.
But on the ground, buying just one rad-hard chip can cost anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000. And hardening a single power grid substation down here on Earth, that's $1 to $5 million.
Per substation. And currently, total worldwide spending on space weather research is only about $200 million a year.
It's like having a limited allowance. Do you spend your money on a really good weather app to warn you about the rain? Or do you spend it on an indestructible titanium raincoat?
This raises an important question about how society balances its resources, because the space economy is changing fast.
How so?
10 years ago, we mostly launched a few massive, very expensive satellites. Rad-hard armor was a must. Today, we're launching thousands of tiny CubeSats every year.
Right, little shoebox-sized satellites.
And they use cheap, commercial, off-the-shelf parts. They can't afford a $100,000 processor, so if you only fund expensive armor, you price all those smaller explorers right out of space.
But if you only rely on cheap parts with no armor, you are totally dependent on the weather forecast. If the warning system misses a storm, you could lose 1,000 satellites in a single day.
Exactly. Which is why the consensus is we absolutely need both.
We have to split the allowance.
We have to. We need to keep funding missions like SMILE for those crucial early warnings so operators can power down sensitive gadgets before a storm hits.
But we also need to invest in making rad-hard parts cheaper.
Right. Developing cheaper process hardening so that small satellites just have better built-in safety by default.
We need the cutting-edge weather radar. And we need a cheaper raincoat.
It's the only way forward.
This has been such a phenomenal deep dive. To recap for everyone listening, we explored Earth's giant magnetic shield and how solar storms can stretch it like a rubber band until it snaps.
We talked about the brand new SMILE spacecraft taking global space pictures.
With its crazy lobster eye telescope. And we learned about the dangers of single event upsets and how we make our electronics tougher with glass layers and voting circuits.
It really is an incredible multidisciplinary effort.
It is. And hey, if you want to test some of these ideas at home, there are some awesome things you can do. you can build a simple compass to find the magnetosphere's direction.
Oh, that's a great activity.
Just take a sewing needle, rub it against a strong magnet, and float it on a little piece of cork in a bowl of water. It'll line right up with the Earth's invisible shield.
You can also hop online and look up live aurora webcams. When those solar storms hit and the magnetic lines snap, it creates the northern lights. You can watch the shield working in real time.
I love that. And if you want an engineering challenge, try designing a radiation shield for a remote control car or a Lego robot.
Yes, using everyday materials.
Exactly. Use cardboard, foam, or metal foils. Have someone toss crumpled paper balls at it, that's your solar wind, and see which combo protects the robot without making it too heavy to move.
You'll be doing the exact same optimization math aerospace engineers do every day.
So cool. But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final exciting puzzle to mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
We spent this whole time talking about how Earth's giant magnetic shield is the only thing keeping our complex electronics and us safe.
It's a luxury we definitely depend on.
But think about the future. When human explorers finally travel to build a colony on a planet like Mars, they'll be landing on a world that doesn't have a global magnetic field.
Nothing to deflect the solar wind.
No invisible umbrella waiting for them. So if we intend to live there, run computers, and build power grids, how will the engineers of tomorrow solve that?
Will they build deep underground?
Or is it possible to build a giant artificial magnetic shield just to encompass the colony? How do we take the bubble with us?
That is a fascinating problem to solve.
Keep that puzzle in mind the next time you look up at the night sky. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, keep digging deeper and stay curious.
Thanks for listening, Discovery Rangers. If you enjoyed this, please ask Mum or Dad to play another episode for you.